Hello and welcome to Stepping Into Truth, the podcast where we have conversations on race, gender, and social justice. I'm your host, Omkari Williams, and I'm delighted that you're here with me today. Our guest today is Melanie Dewberry, an author and coach who comes from a very unique perspective that I think is going to make for a fascinating conversation. Melanie Dewberry has worked in the business of spirituality and consciousness for over 26 years. Her passion community and soul work is nurtured by her Native American elders and her walk on traditional Red Road ceremonial way of life. Melanie is passionate about supporting people in their spiritual evolution. She is the author of The Power of Naming, The Journey Toward Your Soul's Indigenous Nature, published by Hay House in 2017. A professional speaker, she's spoken around the world, including TEDx talks in Austria and Canada. She co-founded the first coaching magazine, Choice, and wrote the Soul of Coaching column for 5 years. Melanie was a senior leader with Coaches Training Institute for 10 years, and today she creates personal ceremonies and rituals for individuals and businesses crossing those imperative thresholds of soul transformation and growth. You can catch her sipping espresso, laughing, and kicking up dirt in her cowboy boots. She knew at the age of 9 that she would be hired to rep the great mystery, and so she does. Welcome, Melanie. Melanie, I am so glad that you are here with me this afternoon for this conversation. I've been looking forward to it for quite some time. So how are you?
Oh, me too, Omkari. I'm good. My spirit's good. I seem to be having issues sleeping, but my spirit's really happy. And I'm happy to be here with you. It's been a long time.
Yeah, it has been a long time since we've talked. And mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I feel like the whole sleeping thing, I know for myself, sometimes it's when my brain has so many ideas and I'm percolating so many things that they will literally wake me up in the middle of the night and I just lie there thinking, couldn't you visit in working hours?
But, right.
The thing I wanted to start this conversation with, because it's the thing that to me, oh, bless you, is most present in your work, is how naming ourselves is an act of self-love. And yes. I would love for you to start by speaking about that, because I, as you well know, believe that names are incredibly powerful.
Yes, and you have a beautiful and powerful name.
Thank you.
Yeah. So the thought of naming being a powerful thing beyond the name we're given at birth is to really recognize your authority and to claim your sense of sovereignty. And to identify and be be married in good health to your medicinal properties. I believe that we each have, you know, an original medicine within us that is really for our own taking first. And then what's left over after we're healed from our own medicine, then we by proximity of standing in our medicine and owning our medicine, we actually heal the world because we ourselves are healed. So I do find it's an act of self-love, and that in my way of doing it is to have people name you, and to name yourself is fine too, but to have your community that you trust and that loves you and sees you to name you is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, when I said naming ourselves, I actually probably should have phrased that a bit differently. I what I really mean is an intentional name rather than necessarily the name we're given at birth.
Correct.
And something you just said, I'd love for you to explain, because some people may not be clear about what you mean by the medicine that we come in with.
Oh, sure. So, you know, just so the listeners know, so I'm coming from an Indigenous perspective. And so my view on the Indigenous perspective is that we all came with many things, you know, our own unique way of showing up, our own unique art, whatever that is. And I classify art as anything that anything that heals. So you might think of it as a vocation. It just, some people might call it your dharma. And then I think about what are your medicinal properties, meaning how you do you in the world without any effort. What is it that is just, if you were surrounded with three or four friends who knew you backwards and forwards and said, you know, what is just Omkari? What is just who she is? Like, how does she show up? Where does she consistently who she is? And they might, you know, they would run out a list of like, oh my God, Omkari's always this and she's always this. Those are going to be your medicinal properties or close to it. So Omkari, if you were surrounded by the people that love you and knew you best, and I were to ask them, so who is Omkari? What is who she is? That's a weird question. Without even trying, what does she bring into the space? You know, what does her presence add? And they would probably identify several aspects, qualities, what I call medicinal properties about who you are. And those medicinal properties often in each one of us, though they're different and some will be the same, but even if we had the exact same medicinal properties in terms of naming them, how they show up between you and I would probably be distinctly different. Mm-hmm. But what happens often is that people want to fit in, or they're asked to dilute their medicinal properties, or they're asked not to show up with them at all. The consensus reality has a way of asking for us not to be who we are without actually hearing that being asked. Like, what I mean is it's in the ethers. And so the naming is about really identifying those medicinal properties and to root yourself to them, to marry yourself to them, and to let nothing cause the rift, because whatever those medicinal properties are for you, they are the very thing that will heal those past wounds, if you have any, and most of us do. And whatever remains will carry you strongly through life. And by virtue of you just being who you are, that in effect is a healing proposition for others to be around. That energy of you as you are, standing in your authority, owning your medicinal properties, owning your original voice, being who you are full out, is healing to see, to witness, to be around.
It's really interesting that you say this to me at this point in time, because I've been following a conversation that has been going on Facebook in the last few days. And it's, to me, the essence of the conversation is whether people are allowed to really be who they are, especially whether Black, Indigenous, people of color are allowed to fully be themselves and take up space in this society. Mm-hmm. Or whether we're being sort of and have been shut into small boxes that are meant to contain who we are. And it's been a fascinating conversation to witness. And I mean, for myself, I look at the incident in Starbucks where the two young Black men were arrested for sitting there waiting for a friend. They were arrested for trespassing. And all they were doing was waiting for their friend before they placed their order, which most people would consider to be courteous. Or the Black women who were golfing and the police were called on them at a club they are members of because they were golfing too slowly, which is hard to even imagine, given that golf is not exactly a speedy game. But that the police would be called to a golfing too slowly complaint. I'm pretty sure that's nowhere in the police manual.
Right. You know? I didn't notice that one. That's incredibly sad.
It was awful. I mean, it was awful. And it all, you know, the police declined to arrest them or do anything and said, this is not a police matter, but that they were even called and that they even showed up. Because I'm pretty sure that if these women had not been women of color, the police would have said, we're not coming to a golf course because someone's playing too slowly. You figure this out on your own.
Of course.
So when we talk about naming and taking up our own space and sort of standing in our own power in this world, I think we're at this moment in time where that is really a very present conversation. And I'd love to hear what you think about that.
Yeah, it's, I'm sorry, I'm just kind of overwhelmed by sadness of those incidences and all the other ones that go unreported, or they're just too much to all take in. I would agree with your premise that, you know, we've been put in tiny boxes. You know, I just, gosh, okay, let me just take a breath because that was just incredibly sad.
Absolutely. I mean, and it is. And thank you actually for that, because I think often something that goes unnoticed is just how much sadness these incidents create. Because yes, we also get angry, but there's an enormous amount of sadness and pain that is underneath the anger.
Absolutely, a lot of grief, that is for sure. Yeah, I'll have to talk to you about a friend of mine whose book just came out. I think it would also be helpful on this conversation. But so without a doubt, our country, United States of America's history has been built on the idea, as we are all aware, I may not agree, but all aware that this country has been built on supremacy. And in order for one to be supreme, others have to be squashed into a box. And so there is definitely an unconsciousness, an unwillingness to be conscious about how that is true. And at the very, at the most polite way of saying it, there is an unconscious bias to how people think about Black people, but are not aware that they're thinking about them that way. They would, you know, oh, I'm not a racist. You know, I remember having that conversation with somebody, and they were saying something really racist about Mexicans, and she said, "I'm not a racist," and I said, I know nobody wants to be a rapist either. They want to just say it's just sex. It's hard to hear this because for you, it was just this, you know, you want to make it an isolated thought. But the truth of the matter is, nobody wants to be called a racist. But what do you think racism is?
Yes.
Do you not understand that it's this? And so it is about putting people in their appropriate place and in their appropriate boxes, and it's been dangerous for us as people of color not to conform, not to straighten our hair, not to talk a certain way, not. And it is time, because we're not going to, we cannot wait for an amendment. We cannot wait for another constitutional anything. We cannot wait for our 40 acres and a mule. The only way it happens is any change happens is sometimes when there's nothing else to, the change is happening. So we have to be able to wear our hair the way we want to, or talk the way we want to, or dress the way we want to, or whatever. Not that it's that divergent, but to not pat ourselves down into small boxes. We have to take up our space. And that's dangerous. It's dangerous for white people, for the government. It's dangerous for them to, in their minds, they identify it with the loss of power rather than the sharing of just a standing.
Yes.
You know?
Yes. And as someone once said, no man who was sane or sober ever gave up power willingly.
Yes.
And, you know, they used man, but they mean person. And that's just the truth, is it's human nature to want to hold on to what we have. And the idea of sharing is something we are taught. I mean, you look at small children, they don't, generally speaking, naturally want to share. It's, you know, it's mine, mine, mine. And then if we expand that into the larger society, we see how incredibly dangerous it is and how incredibly destructive it is. And it's not only destructive to people of color, it is destructive to white people as well. But because they have a certain level of privilege that insulates them from some of the toxicity of those attitudes, they don't notice how destructive it is. They don't notice that they too are living with an enormous amount of fear. The source of the fear is different, but it's still fear. I mean, they're living in fear of having something that they think they need and think they are entitled to taken away. People of color live in fear of having their lives taken away often. So, you know, But when you're in fear, it's not the part of your brain that is rational is not the part that's functioning. So when you have that kind of layer of fear underlying everything, I think it makes it really hard for us to engage in the conversations that do shift things. And I think that's why people are struggling so much right now with these conversations, is because everyone is afraid in different ways and to different levels, but everyone is experiencing some fear. And how to navigate that is really tricky.
Yeah, I'm not the person to ask about that.
Nor am I. Nor am I. It's that was more of a comment than a question.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, all I can offer is that your birthright is all the right you need to be present and to be here. People are going to find a reason to want to judge you, to have you join into the consensus reality about where who you are, where you belong, and how you should live, and how you should show up in the world. And if you comply with that, you will die. It's a death. It's just a death. It's a certain death, and not in the way of a police killing, but it's a death for sure.
Yeah, it's a way of sort of internally suffocating yourself. And
Right.
so the who that you truly are doesn't get to breathe in this world. It's like 10% of you gets to breathe, and the other 90% of you is suffocating. And you aren't who you should be or could be or who the world needs you to be. The world is
Right.
literally starving itself of your contribution. And I think when we have that as a perspective, it shifts how we engage with one another. That we're all here with, as you put it, medicine to offer. But if we are put into these tiny little boxes, we never get to use that medicine in the way that we could. And we not only do not get to heal ourselves, we don't get to make the healing in the world that is there
True.
for us to make.
True, true. Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah, and to me, that's the saddest, in some ways, that's the saddest thing is who knows how much we've lost from each of us not being able to express our medicine fully in this world.
Right.
You know?
Absolutely.
So I wanted to ask you another question because you said something recently on Facebook and I thought, interesting. And you said, those things you put on the internet. You said, at this point of my life, it's impossible to shame or humiliate me. It's my choice if I submit to that, and I do not. I will make huge mistakes, embarrass myself, but I will not allow shame or humiliation to name me and obscure my learning. I am not invested in shaming or humiliation of another. I live by the love of the divine. She does not require my silence when I see wrong happening. I am a voice. And I loved that.
Oh, thank
Loved
you.
that. What got you there? What was the impetus to say that and put that out there?
Oh my God, you probably saw that Facebook posting, so
I didn't see
I'll
the
tell
thread. No, I
the
didn't.
audience. I was commenting on an Instagram post that actually was also on Facebook, and it was a master coaching, not a course, but like a retreat with master coaches. And my comment was, wow, this is pretty monochromatic, meaning there were no people of color in this group, and they were talking. They had labeled these the best coaches in the industry, and I was like, nah, that can't be. They can't just, it's like, first of all, there's only five of them, and the coaching industry is huge. There's got to be a few thousand best coaches, but and then within those best coaches, there has to be some racial and age diversity. They were all pretty much, within a 10-year age span, and there was no racial diversity. And I just called it monochromatic, really not thinking about it very much. I didn't know who was putting it on. I mean, I knew the organization, but I didn't know what individuals were putting it on. So I kind of hashtagged them so that they would see it. hoping we could have a conversation, maybe offline. And I went to bed not really thinking much about it. Nobody really commented. I think there were a couple of likes when I went to bed. And then when I woke up, oh my God, you know, there was like a war what happened. And I was, you know, people were, you know, one of the people who was involved actually was a Facebook friend of mine. I didn't know that. And she was very upset at me. And then people were upset at her. And I just, and she had said some things that, you know, could have been perceived shaming. And I just thought, you know, no, that's not how I roll. That's not my jam. You can't shame. You can say whatever you want, but it doesn't alter, you know, my own assured humanity. You can say what you want. And I think she, you know, she felt bad about that at some point. And she really started listening to what people were saying about her own comments. I mean, I basically really didn't have to say anything because everybody else jumped in before I could wake up and get online. So that comment really came from there. It's like, you can say whatever you want to say about me. You know, I made a decree years ago when I was cornered by a group of people who were, you know, accusing me of this and that. I'm like, hey, you know, my character stands on its own. It needs no defense. I will not defend myself. Check in 5 or 10 years and we'll see, you know, who's steady in their character and who's been shaking, you know. So that's really where that came from.
Because I didn't know the backstory on it, and I thought something must have happened, but I don't really know what it was. And I have to say, this statement made me so happy because I think it's one of the things, one of the tools that is used against women in particular is shaming. We're shamed for our appearance, we're shamed for the way we parent, or we're shamed for not being parents. And I mean, the list is just endless. And I love that you just said, you know, no, those days are long gone, not going back to that time. And I think, especially in light of the conversations that are happening in the world right now, as we are actively in this society grappling with issues of white entitlement and what Black people want and what people of color want in this society as members of this society, that shaming, no matter which way it's going, needs to be something we stop doing to one another.
It has to. You know, the shaming of white people as well. It's like,
Absolutely.
you don't have to be nice about it, but you have to be grounded in a sense of patience, not patience, excuse me. No, God, no more patience. A sense of, you know, honoring their humanity and not shaming them so much that they can't even show up and hear the conversation.
Yes.
So, I mean, you know, and the truth of the matter is, some people will be shamed no matter what you say and how you say it, you know, because when you call somebody a racist or you tell somebody what they're doing is, you know, racist, that makes them feel shamed. But, and some of that's going to be on the person, you know, it's like, I'm trying to decide if I should share this. And I was going through, you know, Facebook. I guess they have the stories, little videos, and there was this,
Yeah.
I'm not going to mention any names, a young woman who was in a bikini talking about manifesting abundance, and all I could see were her breasts. I'm like, huh? I can't hear you. I just wrote, huh? I can't hear you. And, you know, and I thought, you know, that'll maybe engage us in a conversation where I can go to her as like, you know, I noticed that every time you're live, you know, there's this, and I don't want to do any body shaming, but I wonder about what message she's sending out. You know, you have
Right.
to be generous to the spirit. You don't have to be nice, but you do need to have a form of generosity that doesn't not say the truth. You know, I'm not asking anybody to dilute the truth. It's just, you don't want to wallop somebody so they can't get up and hear it, and then it's on them if you're generous in spirit, and can leave them with their dignity. We don't have to take away people's dignity to teach them a little bit. it's on them then to decide, you know, if whether they're going to be shamed because we tell them, hey, that image was, you know, not cool. You know,
yeah.
People decide to get shamed sometime as a way out.
That's a really interesting point. I hadn't thought about it that way, because to me, I definitely think there's a difference between being nice and being kind.
Absolutely.
And I think often people confuse those two things, and
mm-hmm.
kindness is not necessarily nice, but kindness
right.
is telling someone the truth about something. That to me is kind. And then, you know, you can do it mean or you can do it kind, but truth
right.
in and of itself is a virtue. And
right.
I think often we don't want to hear the truth because we're sort of told that it's going to make us uncomfortable and we run from discomfort. And that's actually something that I'm very curious about, because you've been a coach for a long time. And my experience with my coaching clients, and actually, honestly, just with humans, we run from discomfort. And I think it might be biologically programmed in us, because discomfort equals danger, you know, in our sort of lizard brain. And it makes it really hard sometimes to shift out of a pattern that is not working for us, because we can't make ourselves just sit there and notice what's happening. Is that something that you've observed in your work with people?
You know, it, of course, naturally it is. And I would say, you know, Kari, you know a bit about my Native American heritage and my, you know, I'm a part of that kind of ceremonial way of life. And one of the things I've learned about that ceremonial way of life is that you have to surrender. And that's not something we're taught. You're right that, you know, maybe the lizard brain has us run away when things get uncomfortable. But emotional, you know, being emotionally uncomfortable is a totally different thing. When there's no physical or emotional harm being done to you, then what we need to do is surrender so that we can be present. Actually, surrender into the fear of it. Surrender into the, you know, my God, what, you know, because really what we're thinking is, you know, I'm not that horrible person. And it's not that. No one's, you know, surrender into the conversation. And one of the things that, I mean, excuse me, not one of the things, what I wanted to say is in the ceremonial way of life, there's a lot of physical discomfort, which kind of messes with you emotionally. And if you power through it, you know, if you go on the vision quest where there's no food and there's no water and you're in one space for 4 days and four nights, you know, I get people who aren't Native who tell me they've been on vision quest. And I'm like, I appreciate your sacrifice, but, you know, if you've got a gallon of water and crackers, you're not on a freaking vision quest. Because the point of the vision quest is to A, not have any distractions from food and water, and to B, teach you, one of the many things is to teach you to surrender. So surrender all the things you think you need in order to be present, in order to be comfortable, in order to be you, so that the divine, so that creator, God, can actually show you who you are. But if you're so bound up in the fear of hearing what someone else has to say, I mean, I've had people tell me some really hard truths expanded me, that cleared out the junk closet within my own soul. You know, that freed up space for me to grow that was just full of mildew and old stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And if we're running from it, or if we're defending it, which is a form of running.
Yes.
Okay. Then we're just the same junk closet, junk drawer that we were when we started the conversation. And so if you can let go of feeling damaged, as though you are some child who's being beaten and it's so unfair, if you can let go of that internal conversation, just surrender into it and take what's true, and then have a discourse. If the way it was said to you doesn't work, then have a discourse that says, you know, next time we talk, here's what works for me.
Yeah, that's a really interesting point. And I think that actually we are at a point in society where we no longer draw a distinction between emotional discomfort and physical discomfort. We've sort of merged the two of them together, which is why people get so readily freaked out about emotional discomfort. They've no one is attacking you, no one is threatening your life, but if people can't distinguish between this makes me uncomfortable because I may have to change, and this is making me uncomfortable because I'm in a physically dangerous situation, when we stop making that distinction, it shuts down the possibility of evolving as into better people and clearer people and kinder people, because we will just stop in our tracks and say, no, this is dangerous and I am going no further. And we stop hearing. And I think that a lot of the crosstalk that I have been witnessing online lately is reflective of that. People actually, I mean, someone's online, what are they going to do to you? I mean, they're not going to reach through your computer and smack you, but you would literally think people were in physical danger from some of the comments that they make about, I feel so attacked, and I feel like, no, you feel like you're being called on your crap. That's a different thing than being attacked.
And even if you are attacked, I mean, because people could damage your reputation for a little while, but like I said a few minutes ago, you know, your character is going to stand on its own. And so even if you are attacked, you know, you don't have to fight and you don't have to retreat. You can just stay. You can just stay. You know, I just stayed in the conversation when I felt like I was being, quote, attacked. And I didn't call it attacked. I was like, this is really good because I'm learning I don't actually have to defend myself.
And that is amazing. To me, that is exactly what we should all aspire to, is being able to just sit in the discomfort of the conversation, to be able to hear what is true. Because even the worst person is, if they know you at all, there's probably something in what they're saying that has some validity and is at least worth thinking about. You may then decide, no, not so much. But when we just shut that door right away and say, nope, I'm walking away from this because I'm uncomfortable, nothing changes and no bridges are built and no communication really happens. And we give up the opportunity to look at ourselves and assess ourselves as dispassionately as we like to assess other people.
It's very hard work, and not everybody is up for the challenge. Because you have to let go. See, the surrender, if you allow yourself to surrender, you know your medicinal properties, you know who you are, but that doesn't mean you're not fallible. If you can surrender, the embarrassment really is what people are feeling, which we name a shame as a platform for running. But if you can surrender, then the embarrassment will surrender. If you can just surrender into it and go, okay, I'm going to stay present. I'm going to stay present. And if you know who you are, if you are centered in your authority and in your sovereignty, no one can do you real damage. They really can't.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, I know I'm sure I'll get some pushback on that, but,
you know, we're not talking about physical damage. Yes. People could theoretically do you physical damage.
Sure.
But emotional damage, you know, that you have to agree to. If you don't agree to that, then, you know, bring it on, say what you will, and I'm still going to be true to what I know to be the truth and the ground beneath me. Mm-hmm. And that is something that I think often we let ourselves get shaky on because we're so outward focused, you know, we're so interested in getting likes on Facebook or, you know, fans here or attention there, that it takes us out of that relationship with ourselves. It takes us out of that relationship with our own medicine. And then we are really unstable in the world.
Yes.
And I think that that's a real problem, is that, I mean, and I have a love-hate relationship with social media.
Right.
But, you know, I totally do. That's just truth. But there are things I do love about it. But one of the things I really don't like about it is how it tries to sort of funnel us all into, again, a small box of this is what's good and this is what's bad. And if you're outside of that box, then you're somehow, you don't quite measure up. And I think that, yes, we are sort of, we are tribal by nature, but I think in a lot of ways, social media exacerbates the worst aspects of tribalness.
And yes.
So, you know, it's a balancing act. It's like everything else. It's a balancing act, finding that place where it's useful and where we learn from it and not letting it shape us into people that 5 years from now, we won't even recognize as ourselves.
Yes, I agree.
You know, so I would also love to talk to you because you and I could go on this kind of thing for quite some time. But I want to talk about your book, The Power of Naming, The Journey Toward Your Soul's Indigenous Nature. And I remember when you started writing this book and what an incredible journey it was for you to write this book. And I would like for you to talk about that a little bit because it was a pretty amazing time.
You mean by incredible journey? It was like pulling teeth.
Yeah, well, you know, one woman's incredible journey is another woman's tooth pulling.
Well, I'm sorry. So what is it you'd like to know specifically?
So I'm really, well, first off, you fought to win this opportunity to write this book that was going to be published by Hay House. So, you know, I mean, it's like, I'm sorry, girl, but pulling teeth, you went out and asked them for the dental surgery.
I won a contest. Yeah, I applied in a contest and I won. And yes, I did. I did fight hard to win that. And I was super grateful. And then I realized, oh crap, I'm going to have to actually write it. But at the time I really didn't think of myself as a writer as much as I am an orator. So, the process, you know, I'm not sure exactly what I'm supposed to be saying about it, but, it took me a long time to surrender into the fact that I was a writer now. And I just wanted to make sure I wrote a book that my editor said, you're not writing the book for the 97%, meaning that 97% of the people weren't going to read the book because the book asked you to do a lot of personal reflection and inside work.
Yeah, it does.
And I said, great. There are a lot of people already have, I said, great. That's good because there are a lot of books that already are offered to the 97% that don't ask much of people and that people, you know, don't really transform from those books. They're just really great ideas. I mean, how many people read Eat, Pray, Love? And I'm not dissing Gilbert at all, Elizabeth Gilbert at all. I'm just saying it was a really popular book. But it didn't mean that women went out and did self-reflection. Got to their own, you know, sweet spot. In my book, I take people deeply into their soul and deeply into their truth. And perhaps it's only for that 3% of the population that truly wants to have a sense of what it is to be a free, loving human being, to really know who they are, not so they can be full of pride, but so that they can be free to share their medicine, so they can be free to share their art, so that they can be free and yet deeply aligned with source energy or creator or God, whatever the word is for people. I use creator or God or divine. And so that they can be directed by a higher sense of themselves, a higher source, and not be wedded to the archive of yesterday, which is where most of us make our decisions for this moment and the next. Nothing is ever really happening in the now. So for those people, I wrote the book to do a lot of stripping of the layers that don't serve them in order for them to hear at their soul level, what is your name? For them, for their community, and for their community to hear and see and witness them standing in their name, and for them to go forth unnegotiated, uncompromised, and who they are.
I love that. I just, that makes my heart melt. I just love that.
I appreciate it.
Oh, no, absolutely. And especially something you just said for their community, because community is very present for me right now. I feel like we're living in a time where expanding our sense of community and deepening our sense of community as well are really important, and that we start doing the work of that in a way that was easier when we all grew up, lived, and then died in the same town. And now, because we're so spread out and because we move around so much, building community is a much trickier thing. And yet I think it's essential to humans to have deep, meaningful community. And I'm afraid we're losing that skill. And that part of what I see now that gives me hope is people building community. Yep, some of it's online, but then some of those relationships expand offline, or just still, even though they're virtual, they manage to start acquiring a depth from a shared experience and a shared commitment to ideas. And I think that that's really important, because it feels like we're so fractured right now that right. if we don't figure out how to address that, we are going down a very, very dangerous and dark path. And I think knowing our names, knowing who we are, what our medicine is in this world, gives us a place in our communities.
Yes, it does.
You know, and that feels very, very important. And it also means that within the community, so you know your name but you and your medicine, but you also can see someone else's medicine and value them in the community. So everyone gets lifted up by being able to contribute their gift to the world. Even if the world is just the 20 people around them, that matters. It doesn't
it
have
does.
To be the whole world.
As long as they're not wearing a man bun.
I know. What's up with those? Those are... I saw someone with one of those today, and I thought, oh, come on. Come on.
And I don't know, but, you know, we'll try not to shame them.
I mean, I just try and avert my eyes because it's just, it's one of those fashion trends that you wish would just roll over and die quickly. Please
I,
just die.
You know, I figured I did my worst in the 70s, so I got to hang in there for them.
I mean, I just want to say, because our time is coming to a close here, that this has been such an enjoyable conversation. And I would like to ask if there's something that you would like to say in finishing that would guide us as people who are looking for our names or people who are looking to understand our own medicine. Is there anything, any wisdom that you would like to lead us out with?
Oh, thank you for asking. Here's, you know, it's not the easiest. And I know some people might sigh when they hear this, you know, when people ask me, you know, I want to know my purpose and that somewhere in your medicine and in your original story, here's what I tell them is surrender to love, start in love and let's see what goes from there.
That's start love. Excellent. That's an excellent starting place, and it's an excellent ending place for this conversation. Melanie, thank you so much. I am so grateful that we had this opportunity to talk, and your friendship, as you know, is so important to me. So thank you, thank you, thank you.
Oh, thank you, Ms. Amkari. I so appreciate you. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can connect with Melanie at melaniedubarry.com, and I will pop that link into the show notes. If you enjoyed what you heard, please do subscribe. Thanks for joining me for this conversation, and I will be back with another episode very soon.